A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about that episode we did on careers for maximum pay with minimum effort, the sysadmin monitoring systems that run themselves, and he wants to push it further. If agentic AI can build production systems now, how far are we from systems that maintain themselves? Self-healing code bases that do their own audits, triage bugs, write patches, deploy fixes, update the change logs and documentation. All of it. The human moves from debugger to overseer, only stepping in when the AI's triage has already failed. His real question is whether we can get there without the whole thing spiraling into catastrophic regression loops where each fix creates two new problems. So, where are we actually at with this?
The honest answer is, we're further along than most people think, but nowhere near the full vision. Self-healing systems exist right now, they're just narrow.
Narrow how?
Kubernetes has had self-healing for years. Pod crashes, it restarts. Node dies, it rebalances. That's infrastructure level, though. It's reactive, not intelligent. A pod restarting doesn't understand why it crashed. What's changed in the last 18 months is the agentic layer on top. Systems that can actually read the error, reason about the cause, generate a patch, test it in a sandbox, and only then deploy.
So we've gone from restart the thing to understand why the thing broke and fix the code.
And the numbers are, they're not perfect, but they're real. There's a system called AutoPatch AI. It resolved 100% of its benchmark cases. 5 out of 5, average 42 seconds per fix, first shot. Runs on a local model 7 billion parameters. That's not a data center full of GPUs. That's something you could run on a workstation.
5 out of 5 is a small benchmark.
It is, and I should say, those were localized bugs. Single file logic issues, import errors, missing dependencies, the kind of thing where the fix is obvious once you've read the traceback. Where these systems struggle is multi-file semantic bugs, business logic, anything where the context is spread across the code base and the correct behavior isn't obvious from the error alone.
So the 85 to 90% success rate people cite, that's for the easy stuff.
Syntactic and localized bugs, yes. Once you hit complex semantic issues, it drops to around 40 to 50%, and that's where the loop problem Daniel's worried about gets real. You let an agent loose on a multi-file bug, it produces a patch that looks plausible, passes the tests, but actually fixes the wrong thing, or worse, introduces a subtle regression that won't surface for weeks.
Plausible but incorrect. That's the phrase, isn't it?
That's exactly the phrase. It's from a paper called Retrace that came out, last week actually. August 26th, and they identified this as the fundamental blind spot. The agent produces a patch, runs the tests, everything's green, but it has no independent signal that the patch actually addresses the reported problem. It might have just silenced the symptom.
How do you verify a patch independently?
Their approach is clever. They do it in two directions. Forward reconstruction. They take the original issue and the agent's trajectory and build a repair rationale. What should the fix look like? Then backward reconstruction, they look at the patch in isolation and infer what problem it appears to solve without seeing the original issue. Then they reconcile the two. If the patch solves a different problem than the one reported, it gets flagged.
So it's like having a second agent whose entire job is to ask, "Are you sure you fixed the right thing?"
And it works. They lifted pass at 1 on SWE bench verified from 56% to 63% with GPT-5 Mini. With Minimax 2.5 from 75.8 to 79.4. The cost per issue stayed around 6 or 7 cents. That's the kind of verification infrastructure that makes self-healing viable. Not better AI, better checking.
The constraint space defines the creative space.
Where's that from?
I don't know. It just sounded right.
It does sound right. And it's actually the philosophy behind a framework called Ural Loop that shipped in April. Their whole thesis is that to give an agent real autonomy, you have to bind it with absolute constraints first. You define the 20 things it can never do, the danger zones, the iron laws, and enforce them at the tool level, not by asking the agent nicely. The clawed code hooks will hard block an exit. Two, if it tries to touch something it shouldn't.
So the path to more autonomy is more rules, not fewer.
Which is philosophically interesting, because the vibe coding era, you know, just let the agent loose and see what happens. That's produced exactly the opposite of what you'd expect. It's created a backlash toward bounded autonomy. People got burned by agents hallucinating file paths, breaking production constraints, getting stuck in infinite fix-break loops. The response wasn't, make the AI smarter, it was build a cage.
A cage. The AI can't see but can't leave.
Right. And inside that cage, it can do 10,000 things autonomously. The constraint defines the freedom. OroLoop was tested on a real blockchain L1 session. The agent autonomously remediated 4 failures across 5 hypotheses, discovered the root cause was architectural, not code level, and reduced pre-commit latency from 100 to 200 milliseconds down to 4 milliseconds. That's a 98% reduction.
Wait, the root cause was architectural, and the agent figured that out?
It did. HTTP routing issue, not a code bug. The agent ran through 5 hypotheses, eliminated the code level ones, and reported that the problem was in the routing layer. That's not debugging, that's diagnosis. That's a different category of work entirely.
Which brings us to the human role. Daniel's framing was that the human moves from debugger to overseer, only stepping in when AI triage fails. Is that where we are?
Partially. The spectrum right now runs from fully autonomous within bounds, auto-patch AI, Valor, through semi-autonomous, where the human reviews and clicks approve, that's the Sonar Cube remediation agent, to human in the loop for risky changes. OroLoop triggers human review when a change touches a danger zone, or after 3 or more consecutive retries, or when architectural complexity is detected.
So, the human isn't eliminated. They're repositioned.
And the acceptance rates tell an interesting story. In semi-autonomous mode, over 60% of patches were accepted with little to no modification. There's a system called FLAAM from Temple University. It achieved 65.78% success on SWE Benchlight, but more importantly, developer patch acceptance improved by 22.7%. The AI isn't just fixing bugs, it's getting better at producing fixes humans trust.
Trust is the bottleneck, not capability.
That's exactly what the data suggests. The prototype numbers show 55 to 70% faster recovery times. The AI can fix the bugs. The question is whether we'll let it, and that trust may not come from better models. It may come from better verification infrastructure. Independent verification, runtime guardrails, sandboxed validation.
Let's talk about what actually breaks in these agentic systems. You mentioned the self-heal paper, 930 buggy instances analyzed. What did they find?
This is the part that surprised me. They categorized 23 distinct fix patterns across Stack Overflow, GitHub, and Hugging Face. The most common fix on Stack Overflow was addition of operations, 13.1%. Add new attribute was 9.9%. But here's the thing, only 5 to 7% of fixes required prompt modification.
So the LLM is mostly fine.
The LLM is mostly fine. What breaks is the orchestration layer, the tool use, the memory management, the workflow logic. Missing operations, wrong parameter values, version incompatibilities. The AI part isn't the fragile bit. The agent part is.
That's almost the opposite of what you'd expect. Everyone's worried about the model hallucinating, but the model's fine. It's the plumbing around it that leaks.
And it means the debugging challenge is fundamentally different from traditional software. You're not debugging a function that returns the wrong value. You're debugging a chain of tool calls where step 3 used a stale file path because the memory context got truncated between steps 2 and 4. The bug isn't in the code, it's in the agent's internal state.
Which is harder to reproduce.
Much harder. The self-heal paper has this great example. An agent fails to answer, "What's my name?" but succeeds on, "Do you know my name?" Same information, different phrasing, different retrieval behavior, and this varies across LLM providers. How do you write a regression test for that?
You can't. Not in the traditional sense.
Which is why the sandboxed validation loop matters so much. Every Sirius system now applies patches in an isolated Docker container first. Valor uses 512 megabytes of RAM, 1 CPU, 60-second timeout. The patch runs the full test suite. If it passes, it gets promoted. If it fails, the error output feeds back into the model for another attempt, capped at N retries.
And the security angle?
Valor integrates SimGrep static analysis with CVSS version 3.1 scoring. High-severity vulnerabilities get blocked before the patch is applied. They reported zero security issues across over 1,000 validated patches. That's not nothing.
So the guardrail stack is sandbox, test suite, static analysis, independent verification, runtime constraints. 5 layers.
And yet no one is running fully unattended on critical code bases. Every documented system either operates semi-autonomously with human review or is scoped to non-critical code. Benchmarks, test repos, quality gate fixes. The catastrophic loop problem is acknowledged but not solved. Mitigated, not eliminated.
What about the documentation side of Daniel's question? Chung logs, documentation updates. Is anyone automating that?
Not as part of the repair loop. I looked for this specifically. The closest thing is Valor's PR generation, which includes a summary of what was fixed and why, but that's not structured changelog maintenance. It's not updating the doc site. Nobody has wired that into the autonomous loop yet.
Which is interesting, because in a lot of teams, the documentation drift is worse than the bugs.
And it's the kind of thing an LLM should be good at. Here's the diff, here's the codebase, update the relevant documentation. That's a summarization task, but nobody's built it.
Probably because the human is still doing the review, and the human writes the changelog as part of the merge.
Right. If you're already in the PR reviewing the patch, adding the changelog line is trivial. The automation value only appears when the human isn't in the loop at all, and we're not there yet.
Let's talk about the biological metaphor. I've seen papers framing self-healing software as an immune system, sensors, cognitive core, healing agents. Does that hold up?
It's seductive, and it's everywhere. The April 25th paper from Bakar and colleagues explicitly analogizes to the human body. Observability tools as sensory inputs, AI models as the cognitive core, healing agents as the immune response, and I understand why. It's a beautiful metaphor. But biological healing is slow, redundant, and tolerates imperfection. Your immune system doesn't need to be correct 100% of the time. It just needs to be correct enough to keep you alive. Software healing demands speed, determinism, and zero regressions. The metaphor breaks down precisely where the engineering challenge is hardest.
Your body can run a fever for 3 days and call it a win. Your payment processing system can't.
The tolerance for imperfection in software is, for critical systems, zero. Or close enough to zero that the biological metaphor stops being useful. A self-healing system that's right 90% of the time and introduces subtle data corruption. The other 10% is worse than no self-healing at all.
Because at least with no self-healing, you know you have to work.
Silent corruption is the nightmare scenario, and that's what all these guardrails are really defending against. Not the bug the agent fixes successfully, the bug it introduces while fixing something else that passes all the tests that nobody notices for 6 months.
The Samsung framework. They built a reliability score, right?
Yes. This came out in May. They integrate failure detection with a quantitative score, R equals omega 1 times consistency, plus omega 2 times semantic correctness, plus omega 3 times execution success rate, threshold of 0.65. Tested with GPT-5 on 300 task instances with 30% fault injection.
30% fault injection is aggressive.
It is, and the framework handles it by doing replanning, prompt correction, tool reselection, adaptive recovery at runtime. The agent doesn't just retry the same thing, it changes its approach based on what failed.
So we're building systems that can diagnose their own failures and change strategy. That's not debugging anymore. That's metacognition.
It's metacognition in a very narrow domain. But yes. And there's a system called Vigil from last December that takes this even further. It's a reflective runtime that supervises a sibling agent. It ingests behavioral logs, maintains what they call an emotional state bank, and performs autonomous maintenance including meta-level self-repair when its own diagnostic tools fail.
Emotional state bank.
IDO.
That's a choice of terminology.
It's a vector of sentiment scores and interaction patterns. They called it an emotional state bank. I'm just reporting what the paper says.
The paper wrote a check its engineering couldn't cash.
Probably, but the underlying idea is sound. If your diagnostic system can break, you need a diagnostic system for your diagnostic system. Recursive self-repair, and Vigil actually does this. When its own tools fail, it has procedures for repairing the repair infrastructure.
How deep does that recursion go? Who watches the watchers?
In Vigil's case, one level. The sibling agent watches the primary agent. If the sibling breaks, I don't think they solve that. Most people haven't.
There's always a human at the bottom of the recursion stack.
There's always a human somewhere. Which brings us back to Daniel's question about the human in the loop. The shift is real. You can see it in the system architectures. The human moves from person who fixes bugs, to person who reviews patches, to person who defines the danger zones and iron laws. Each step further from the code.
And each step requires less technical depth from the human, but more judgment.
That's the part I think gets missed in these discussions. Everyone focuses on whether the AI can write correct patches. The harder question is whether the human overseer can correctly define the constraints. If you set the danger zones too wide, the agent can't fix anything, too narrow, and it can break everything. The human's job becomes architecture-level reasoning about failure modes.
Which is harder than debugging.
Much harder. Debugging is reactive. Here's a stack trace, find the null pointer. Defining constraint boundaries is predictive. What are all the ways this could go wrong that I haven't thought of yet?
So we're trading one hard problem for a harder one and calling it progress.
We're trading a problem we know how to solve. Slowly, expensively, with humans. For a problem we don't fully know how to solve yet, but which scales better if we crack it. That's the bet.
What's the economic case right now? Do we have numbers?
The prototype data shows 55 to 70% faster recovery times, patch acceptance in semi-autonomous mode at 60 to 65%. For the class of bugs these systems can handle, syntactic, localized, dependency issues, the time savings are real. A fix that takes a human 30 minutes takes the agent under a minute.
But that's not the full cost picture. The human still has to review.
And the review takes less time than writing the fix from scratch. The SonarQube model, generate the fix, verify against the analysis engine, post to the PR, the developer reviews, and clicks one button. That's maybe 2 minutes versus 30. The ratio works.
For the bugs the system can handle.
For the bugs the system can handle. Which is the asterisk on every one of these numbers? The benchmark performance drops off a cliff when you leave the well-trodden path of single-file logic bugs. Multi-file semantic issues, business logic, async flows, 40 to 50% success. And that's on curated benchmarks, not production chaos.
So the sales pitch is, we can autonomously fix 85% of the boring stuff, and we won't touch the hard stuff without asking.
Which is actually a pretty good pitch. 85% of bugs are boring. Every developer knows this. The import errors, the missing null checks, the wrong parameter order. If an agent handles those while the human handles the architecture level issues, that's a real division of labor.
The concern is the 15% the agent thinks are boring but aren't.
That's the concern, and that's where the independent verification layer becomes load-bearing. Retraces bidirectional reconstruction, Aura Loop's danger zones, Regress Guard's pre-commit snapshots, these aren't optional extras. They're the difference between a system that's useful and a system that's dangerous.
Regress Guard, that's the one that snapshots API routes before the agent edits.
Yes, ships as an MCP server so agents can self-verify inside their own loop. It snapshots API routes, schemas, and test results before the edit, then checks for regressions after. Blocks the commit if something silently broke, released in May.
The tooling is maturing faster than the models.
That's the story of the last 12 months, honestly. The models are incrementally better. The verification infrastructure is categorically different. A year ago, you had an agent that could generate patches, and you just... Now you've got 5 layers of guardrails, each independently developed, each addressing a different failure pattern. The ecosystem is building the safety net underneath the AI, not inside it.
Which is probably the right architecture. Safety is infrastructure, not as training.
You can't train away the problem of plausible but incorrect patches. It's inherent to the task. The only solution is independent verification. someone, or something, that checks the work without access to the same blind spots.
Two agents that don't share a context window.
The fix agent and the critic agent in self-heal. They're both LLMs, but they're prompted differently. They see different information, and the critic's entire job is to find what the fixer missed. That adversarial structure is more important than the specific model under the hood.
Daniel asked whether we can get to a point where all of this, audits, triage, patches, deployment, change logs, documentation, runs without significant human involvement. What's your honest timeline?
For the full vision? Years. The individual pieces exist. Sandboxed patching works, independent verification works, runtime guardrails work. What doesn't exist is the integration layer that wires all of this together into a single autonomous loop that handles the full lifecycle from bug report to deployed fix to updated docs.
Then the trust.
The trust will lag the capability by at least 2 years. Even when the technical pieces are in place, no one's going to flip the switch to fully autonomous on a production payment system or healthcare platform. The first fully unattended systems will be internal tools, developer infrastructure, things where the blast radius is contained.
The CI/CD pipeline maintaining itself.
That's probably the beachhead. If your CI pipeline breaks and the agent fixes it and the fix is wrong, the worst case is a failed build. Annoying, not catastrophic. You run that for a year, collect data, build confidence, then expand the scope.
And the regression loop problem, is it solvable in principle?
I think it's solvable in practice, with enough guardrails. The combination of sandboxed validation, independent verification, and hard runtime constraints, danger zones enforced at the tool level, that's a real solution. There will be edge cases. But the failure rate can be driven low enough that the economics flip. When the agent is right 99.9% of the time, and the human catches the remaining 0.1% during review, you're already in a different world.
The human catches the 0.1%. There's the assumption.
It's an assumption. And it depends on the human still paying attention. If the agent is right 99.9% of the time, the human's attention is the first thing to degrade. You can't stay vigilant for a 1 in 1,000 event.
Which is the automation paradox in a nutshell. The better the automation, the worse the human oversight.
And the more catastrophic the failures when they happen. That's not a reason not to build it. But it's a reason to design the human interface carefully. You don't want the human to be a rubber stamp. You want them to be engaged with the changes that matter.
How do you design for that?
I don't think anyone solved it. The Euroloop approach, human review triggers on danger zones, on repeated retries, on architectural complexity, that's a start. You're not asking the human to review every patch. You're asking them to review the patches that the system itself flags as risky. That's a more sustainable attention budget.
And the system has to be honest about its uncertainty.
Which is a whole other problem. LLMs aren't naturally calibrated for uncertainty. They'll generate a patch with the same confidence whether it's trivially correct or subtly wrong. The Samsung Reliability Score is an attempt to quantify this. Consistency, semantic correctness, execution success, but it's early days.
So the state of play is, the pieces are real, the integration isn't, the trust isn't, and the human interface is an unsolved design problem, but the trajectory is clear.
The trajectory is very clear, and it's worth noting. None of this requires a breakthrough. The models we have now, with the verification infrastructure we've built in the last 12 months, can already handle a large fraction of routine maintenance. The gap isn't capability. It's engineering, integration, and trust.
The boring stuff, as usual.
The boring stuff is where the value lives, always has been.
We had this conversation in 2007. Different words, same shape.
What was the system?
Building management. Johnson Controls had these Metasys controllers, big, beige boxes running a real-time OS you'd never heard of. They'd monitor the HVAC, the lighting, the access control, and the pitch was exactly this. The system watches itself. Flags anomalies. A technician only rolls a truck when the system can't sort it out.
Did it work?
For the easy stuff. Damper actuator stuck at 17%, system cycles it 3 times, freeze it up, logs the event. Nobody ever knows it happened. That worked fine. The problem was the hard stuff. Two sensors disagree by half a degree. The system thinks there's a calibration drift. It starts adjusting the chilled water valve. And now you've got condensation in a server room because the system fixed something that wasn't broken.
Plausible, but incorrect.
We called it helping. The system was helping. And the only way to stop it helping was to widen the deadband so much it stopped catching the real problems either. The building engineers ended up checking everything manually anyway. Took them longer because now they had to figure out what the system had done before they could diagnose.
That's the trust problem in a nutshell. The automation creates new failure patterns that are harder to detect than the original ones.
The thing that actually worked, and this took us 3 years to figure out, was running two identical controllers in parallel, one live, one shadow. The shadow got the same inputs, ran the same logic, but couldn't actuate anything. It just logged what it'd have done. Every morning, the engineer compared the live system's state against the shadow's recommendations. If they diverged, you investigated.
Independent verification, 20 years early.
It wasn't called that. It was called, Frank got tired of being woken up at 3 a.m. because the building decided to heat and cool simultaneously. But yes, the shadow controller couldn't break anything. That was the whole point.
And the comparison. Was that automated or manual?
Manual at first. Frank had a printout. By 2009, we had a dashboard that flagged divergences above a threshold. The threshold was the whole game. Too tight, and you're chasing noise. Too loose, and you miss the condensation in the server room.
Same threshold problem as the danger zones.
Same threshold problem. It doesn't go away. You just move it up a layer.
The shadow controller approach is interesting because it inverts the architecture. Instead of the AI acting and the human reviewing, the AI recommends and the human, or another system, decides what to actuate. The agent becomes an advisor, not an operator.
That's what we ended up with. Took 6 years in a flooded server room. The vendor fought it the whole time because it made their self-healing marketing look weaker. But the engineers loved it. They'd rather make 20 decisions a day with good information than clean up after one decision the system made badly.
The human wants agency, not just oversight.
The human wants to not get called at 3 a.m. Same thing, really.
This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flummingtop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. And if you want to yell at us about shadow controllers or condensation in server rooms, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.